Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blue Abroad Show. It's Monday, the 8th of April, 2024. It's the end of round four. We've gathered. We've come home. We're undefeated. And Pommy's joining us on the Monday for our bumper Monday night here on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. Hello, mate.
Hey up, everyone. How are we doing?
We're undefeated. That's how we're doing.
Mate, first time since 95, and you know what happened then?
I do know what happened then. It was a very special year. A lot of work to come, though. A lot of work to get there, but it's the best start that we've seen with this group. Yeah. 2022,
yeah, it's
the best
start since 95, isn't it?
Yeah, right. So 2022, we were 3-0, then lost to Fremantle. Is that right? Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's fappening.
Did you, like, have you noticed, like, we're up and about, but there's a maturity and a reservedness about the fan base, don't you think?
I think there is.
Depends where you're looking.
Definitely in the playing group, there's definitely a maturity. I mean, I still think, yeah, I mean, You still get, I mean, just it's probably me. I'm probably getting older by old age, but, you know, you still see like dozens of complaints when they win, and, you know, there is striving for perfection, but then there's also just striving for moronicness. And it's quite hard to tell sometimes when I read stuff, are you striving to be a moron? Are you striving to be perfect? Sport's never perfect though. It's never linear. And, I think we're going to have a good discussion tonight, but I think we've beaten four teams who play four formidable brands of football, four different brands of football, and we've conquered all that's before us. So, different test this week, but I'm looking forward to this test this week. I'd imagine the doubters will say, "Oh, Adelaide 0-4." Oh, fired up. But, I mean, we're 4-0, chance to go 5-0. And I think that's equally as impressive as Mrs. Pom delivers a cup of tea. Thank you, Mrs. Pom.
Thank you, Mrs. Pom. Yeah. I just finished watching the replay about 15 minutes ago. I remember the first reaction I had after the game, even in the fan cams. There was this sense that we had played terribly. I don't think we played terribly. I think defensively we played pretty well. I just think we didn't have the game on our terms. Do you think that means we played terribly?
I think if you look at it, if you're looking for offensive, aggressive, sexy football, do you know what I mean? Four-play football, it probably wasn't there, was it? Do you know what I mean? This was more being married for 10 years and it's Friday night with the kids out type football. You know what I mean, it was quite routine. It was quite monotonous at times. But, you know, you know what? I think it's very easy to say the Blues didn't play well, but you actually look at Fremantle in their games this year, no one's really played well against them. They have a system, and people have called it anti-football, negative. 2017 Carlton were very like that. Stop teams playing. You came to us. It was boring. It was monotonous. It was 18 men behind the ball. And that's hard to break down. And that's something traditionally that we have struggled with. When we've got better, I remember last year we were saying Carlton have lost that dirty football, that dirty football type DNA. They had to find a way. And at the end of the day, do you know what I mean? This league, for the first time ever, has eight defined styles of play between 10 teams that can win the flag. And then another four styles of negative football from the rest. So the Blues are going to have to negate it. And they negated it pretty well.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get stuck right into it. We've got a BA show now. We've then got the ratings straight after this. So it's a double dose of Pommy and I. We'll start as we always do with a review of the game. So chat, give us three words. How you summarized round four, and type it in the chat. And Pommy, Let's get cracking. So what were the themes and issues front of mind for you in this game?
Well, I think Shane, you're speaking my language. It was very Tiger Woods in his heyday. Do you know what I mean? The man who invented a stat called the bounce back stat in golf, where players don't have it their way, but still knock it around in under par, an incredibly important part of elite coaching in golf now. But from my point of view, it felt like we were, have you ever seen Teenage Lions? Like, you know, when you watch documentaries, I love a nature documentary, I do. And you look at adolescent lions and it's how they stalk their prey. I felt we were a very stalky side. And in what I mean by that is we never let the lead get out. Even though we weren't quite connecting, we were struggling with them leaving the wing open, which is their number one game plan. Push you out wide, block the corridor. We never let it get uncontrollable. And I think everyone who's watched the watch along, fourth quarter, I was as calm as shit because they couldn't get away from us. And I knew we still hadn't played. We hadn't done what we needed to do. And once we opened up, we showed how important it is to stalk your opposition. You wait for your moments. And you know what? We've got 18 blokes now. It has to be said. When we do the rating show, you'll see 18 blokes that will wait for an opportunity and they'll take their opportunity. And it's no longer the Patrick Cripps, Charlie Kerner, Adam Saar, Jacob Wietering show. It's now the Boyd, Williams, Cottrell, Kennedy. It's a team show. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've gone from, we are Vegas, Friday night, the Rat Pack. We've got everything. We've got Frank. We've got Dean. We've got Sammy Davis Jr. You're going to have a five-hour extravaganza of the same style of music done five different ways. So I think that's the mantra of the Blues. We're like a pack of hyenas at the moment, just waiting. And you know what? It's a good win. Honestly, my DMs before that game was filled with Danger Game, Fremantle and O mugs, 3-0. Tell you what, something's got to give. And we're one of the only undefeated teams in the comp. Powered sip of a cup of tea.
Yeah. Look, there's something to be said for having to add layers to the way you go about it. Over the first four games, there's no doubt that we've showed that. You could argue we tried to do it last year and maybe we just weren't ready, or maybe there wasn't a buy-in collectively from the group. But the way in which we are finding ways to win, and I think with this game in particular, to come away with the 4 points, and I don't really know how to articulate this. I've been thinking about it all day, like, how do I say this sentence? But like, can you treat it like a loss in your feedback, even though you won and you did a really good job defensively? Do you get what I'm trying to say? Like, we go away from the game, we're undefeated, but if you treat it like a loss, you can come out next week and play like you lost and you've got to respond because you didn't quite get the game on your terms. Did you feel that?
I understand what you're saying. Do you know what I mean? That sometimes you get lucky. You won't find anyone in sport who's any good treating anything as a loss. Do you know what I mean? Wins are paramount. Do you know what I mean? Wins are all manner of evils. I think the Blues will look at that and think, if you'd said at the start of the game, TDK would have hit-outed the second coming of Christ in Luke Jackson, you would have said, okay, well, Carlton are probably going to dominate this around stoppage and clearance. But they didn't. I think I think Voss will look at that and say, the makeup's not quite right. But I think he'll also pick up at Carlton really did struggle this game, I felt, from trying to be too precise. And I don't know if that was because of Fremantle and their preciseness and it was monotonous and boring, or if that was just enforced by Carlton. But there was times like where, you know, well, the Zach Williams running through, smashing it to Charlie Kerner. But then you go back in the first quarter, that didn't happen. The players looked like handball, happy. No one wanted to take the game on. So there's definitely things they'll learn. But it's also putting in perspective, when you analyse something, you can't just analyse your performance because it takes two to tango. Do you know what I mean? It's like coming out of a relationship. You're an idiot if you say your wife was 100% to blame and you divorce her. You were there. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to
You had to apply the role.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? You've got to apply the role, but it's one of these wonderful things. So I think when you look at Fremantle, what they did was fantastic. So Carlton then have got to learn, okay, when this situation happens, how do we better handle it? Because they're never playing a side like Fremantle ever again this year until you play Fremantle. Fremantle are very system-based. St Kilda are 75% though, Fremantle. They will do that. They clog the corridor, push you out wide, right? But they are going to come back at you, which is a different thing. So it's taking things in that. But why do you look at the things we did well? Like, I'd say that. The amount of unforced errors Fremantle had in the second half because Carlton started to hurry them up, right? Carlton being the eighth most pressured side in the league, the number one pressure-giving side, and also the number one in pressure. People suddenly now are talking about clearance and stoppage differential. But the same people that are complaining about it last year said, oh, this is more of an indicator of a middle-of-the-road team. It's all about transition game. Carlton ranked top four for transition game, right? And then when people say, oh, stoppage and clearance, you're also forgetting that Hewitt and Cripps are identical, right, in what they do in the side. Carroll, Chera are identical in what they do in the side. There's no one there that is known for their foot skills and running through. He's out, injured, Sam Walsh. So that will be very interesting when he comes. I think that negates it. But Carlton's stoppage and clearance differential at the moment, although it being 15th, stats are very, very funny. In the first five games of the round, stats are stats. Do you know what I mean? There is teams in the top four of that clearance who got it against North Melbourne. Right?
Yeah, true.
And people forget that the four teams we've played are genuinely bulk midfield. They stop stoppage and clearance. Brisbane have been one of the most frugal sides in the last 5 years. Richmond, they've never been good at it, but they've been good at stopping it. North Melbourne, the anomaly, but look at the game. Carlton did pretty well there. And then this game, look at how they play. Very similar to how we use our wing, our halfbacks as extra wingers. They use it to tuck inside and make it a defence. So Carlton haven't played a side yet. They do this week, though, incidentally. Side that plays very offensive in stoppage and clearances. So that will negate out, but it's always hard. I feel like, yeah, it's a dangerous area. If you're constantly looking at the shit,
yeah,
right, you're never going to get better, right? We won. End of conversation. We won. Didn't
That's
we?
True. We were daring. We were daring enough to make the daring play in the end. No doubt about it. The outcry and the fallout from it. I think the most surprising part of it all is when I liked Justin Longmuir's response in his press conference because it was like, get on with it. We shouldn't have put ourselves in that position. And then it's been really interesting to see their captain, Alex Pearce, come out and say, oh yeah, the umpire said he didn't hear it. He's lying.
Can I just say that excuse reminded me, so in the UK, our referees are a little bit more robust than Australian referees. And I can say that as fact. I've played football for 2 years in this country and I've never seen rough refs cry as much if you answer them back. In the UK, you can swear at them and they're a little bit robust. One of the words that you can't use to a ref in the UK, though, is the C word.
Yeah.
Right? And I tell you what, the amount of times I've said, oh, you dumb C-U-N-T when I played in the UK, and the refs looked at me and I've gone, nah, sorry, I was talking to myself, that tackle, ref. And the ref's like, oh, all right. Do you know what I mean? It's the classic downgrade it, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, this is an interesting conversation, though. Okay, the ball was touched. I think we can all admit it, right?
Yeah.
This is a case in point. 2 minutes before that, they kicked a goal, right? Which effectively sealed the game with the way that the game was going. Look at how Carlton reacted. There was no chuntering.
Yep.
The midfield had a little meeting, but the defenders were switched on. Ironclad, they started high-fiving each other, ruffling each other's hair. Watch what they did when they had their issue, right? What they did is they started swearing, getting angry. That game was still there to be won if it's just that 6 points from Cottrell. Win the centre clearance, steam it down there, get the stoppage, kick a goal, get a clean mark. That shows you the difference of levels. And it's weird to be reviewing this Fremantle game because I can't overemphasize you winning a game when you're stopped from playing is incredibly important. And that will pay us back in 10, 20 rounds time. That kind of shit pays you back.
Yeah, well, I mean, years ago it was, you know, we didn't have the ability to stay locked in and focused for four quarters. I would argue we were locked in for 100 minutes a game. Freo were probably locked in for 98 minutes of game. And it's so good to be talking about our group as the mature ones that got on with it. And, you know, you've got to get lucky. You need luck to win a flag. No doubt about it. It plays its part. Sometimes you make your own luck. And potentially the footy guys rewarded us because of our commitment to the defensive side of the game. And those one percenters, I mean, watching the replay now, I remember him standing out at the time during the game, but a guy like Jordan Boyd and some of those passages of play that he executed on, I think the ball that he touched from Frederick's kick over the top, which Frederick, to be fair, should have kicked it there, should have had a shot on goal potentially. And then that spoil at the end with the fake handball, got it going forward. Like these are guys who are not household names per se, who are contributing. And then you talk about Cottrell later on down the track. This is new. You know, we're not talking about our stars in this game. Kerno was pretty good in the second half, to be fair, but I thought overall had a tough day. Harry probably had his toughest day for the season after, you know, three of the best games you'll see from a forward. And so to find new avenues and new players was a tick.
Mate, if you want to be a loser in life, right, I'll leave you with the words of Robin Van Persie when he told his son, "You sound like a loser." If you're focusing when you fail in life, if only I did this, if only this went that way, you're always going to be a loser. You might as well just quit and go, right, that's it. I am a loser. I'm going to freaking put my L on my forehead, might get it tattooed so everyone knows I'm a complete no-hoper. Or if you approach the thing and go, okay, but what about the time in the second quarter, Fremantle, where you dominated? You dominated territory. You dominated the midfield. You had numerous inside 50s that you couldn't create into repetition. There's your loss. Mm-hmm. If you want to play if onlys, Harry Mackay running into goal 4 metres away. There's 6 points. That would have put Carlton ahead at a key point in the game where you were on top. What about kicking it deliberately out of bounds? That was totally missed, right? Mm-hmm. If you watch that footage back, very cleverly, Harry Mackay sneaks across it. So by the rules, that would have been handed to him. He was the closest person from where it crossed. He would have probably slotted that. There's so many if-onlys. Do you know what I mean? Like, Fremantle, all due respect, this is the last thing I'll say on Fremantle. Incredible game plan. I'm not going to come here and patronise you and say it's shit, miserable. You've got to do what you've got to do in this world to survive. If that's how you do it, I agree. I think it negates all your weaknesses. It negates all the strengths of the opposition. But for that game plan to be sufficient and to be prolonged, you have to maximise the chances. And at the moment, you eat like a Victoria's Secret model. You eat the side salad, but the steak and the chips, you leave, right? Until you start eating the steak and the chips, good sides will always do this to you. You'll never get 18, 24, 30 points in because Carlton played their game plan for 3.5 quarters. Then we hurried them up and it all fell to shit. It was way too easy for Carlton. Way too easy. Shouldn't have got that. So, you know what? If you're crying about umpires, umpires don't win you the game. You do. You had 100 minutes to win it. And if you're saying 1 minute has lost you the game, there lies your issue. You should have battered them. You didn't.
Mate, footy's a magical game. It is. It truly is. So prior to the game, there were a few questions going in. I think the first one, and maybe the main one when it came to a matchup, was TDK coming up against Jackson. I think I've heard him on the telecast call him like the second coming of Christ. And I was like, fucking spare me. I was like, spare me. Another tick in the story of Tom De Koning owning the ruck position, I thought.
You know what? There's something about it, and I covered it in my five things we learned, so we'll probably talk about stoppage and clearance, but I think it's really easy to fix stoppage and clearance. I think it's overplayed, and it always is. But TDK's work around the ground was fantastic. And if you actually look at it, as a ruckman, he beat Jackson. Where he failed was probably around the ground. But then you've got to look at The way Cowton play doesn't really benefit at all who's playing in the middle. You look at Harry when he's in the middle, he struggles. But then you look at what he did in the ruck. It's incredible. And one of the things he's real Matty Cruiser like, it's how he attacks the ball from the bounce. And you see, he goes with his native way of an early jump and trying to use his athleticism. And when it doesn't work, he starts to wind it back. And that second half, I thought Jackson looked average because he just stood his ground. He put his flag in the ground. He goes, I hate jumping, mate. You're going to have to jump into me. Very clever how he did it. And I think people have got to remember, it was 19 out of 24 games that Pitternet led the ruck last year for Cowan, right? What do you think they're used to? Because TDK and Mark Pitternet tap in a total different way. Different way. You can see that's something that's still getting used to. When it works, it works. When it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think the big point about stoppage and clearance, and for me, this shows tactical naivety, right? When people complain about it. Cowton's whole mantra last year was to play a very defensive side and have two players there, George Hewitt and Cripps. And the idea was to repeat stoppages. That was the plan, right? Don't let it out unless we win it. Cowton now are letting that happen because almost half of Cowton's defensive transition scores have come from stoppages and clearances where the opposition have just bombed it. So part of it also is by design that Cowton aren't relying on it. They're setting traps, and two of them traps are two guys you're all going to get excited about. Jordan Boyd and Adam Sard, who keep killing intercept possessions because they're feeding off the back of a stoppage. So for me, TDK is a big part of that because Cowton now are there. And honestly, clearances are important, but your setup behind the ball is. And for me, it's so simple. Like, I would ask the fans who were worried about it, what do you want? Do you want us to dominate clearances, but then get destroyed on transition and not score? Or do you want us to be more attacking and have the traps for when you clear it? It's quite simple for me. This is winning, the other one won't.
15 wins from our last 17 matches, I believe. I think I had said 16 of 18, but I failed to take into account the bye. Regardless, 88% winning record in our last 17, 18 games. I like what you said there. Like, if you're not happy now, when will you be? When we win a flag. I get it. But still, we're watching. I think it's undeniable. We're watching the turnaround. This reminds me of when Richmond couldn't win. They just couldn't figure it out. Close loss after close loss. It became so funny. And then they started falling over the line. And then they seemingly couldn't lose for a period of time. And I can't help but feel we're watching something similar happen before our eyes.
They're beginning to believe, man. They're beginning to believe. And I find it just the most bizarre thing. Do you know what I mean? I really do. Because it is an evolving game plan. So, like, this time last year, everyone was saying Cowton can't win from a stoppage contested situation. Now there's been a huge shift to uncontested, a huge shift to transition. The ball movement is quicker than it's ever been. That's more in line with the top four. The fact that this game plan exists today actually confuses me because this is a total change around from what we saw early from Voss. It's almost like they were building blocks for this to be the plan. The numbers from the running is insane. It's a team defense. So when you have team defense and things like that, no one cares about stoppage and clearance. Do you know what I mean? No one cares about it. Like, do you know what I mean? It's a big thing. And you've only got to look at it this time last year. It was a real hard, sustainable plan. We were different to the media because I said to you, I don't believe you can't win a flag being contested. The issue is it's tiring. It's tiring. It's incredibly tiring and labor intensive. This way isn't. But I'm telling you now, if Carlton can go back to two defensive players around the ball, it's nothing to do with speed. It's nothing to do with that, right? It's how they set up. Last year, the stoppages and clearances against us became repeat stoppages. That's a big issue if you're not turning it over the other end. And that's what killed Carlton when we lost to GWS. That's what killed Carlton against Brisbane. That domination came back when you didn't quite hit it. Mm-hmm. And that's what Carlton have set up for. They've learned. So Walsh got makes a difference to that.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to know when to use your certain aspects of your game. Paul is the first one that I saw in the chat bring this up. Not many are talking about our aerial dominance. Stoppages are one thing, clearances are another thing. Our aerial dominance is on every line on the field is starting to take shape, as is our forward pressure, our tackles inside 50. We are seeing them begin to lock it in. I don't know if that number's a little bit inflated because we had, I think it was, 19, whatever it was last week against North. But that is something that we're seeing from our small forwards a bit more consistently so far over four games. And I don't know if that's enough of a sample size for you, but it's something that's showing for me. There's a desperation in the way we're tackling early in this season.
It's very important. It's very important. It's something that, you know, all three of our coaches, that two of them that we don't like, Teague and Bolton, drum this in. A key pillar of Hawthorn, their dynasty, was forward pressure. A key pillar of Richmond was their forward pressure. A key pillar of Geelong winning the other year was their forward pressure. 19 tackles between three of them, right? Now, people talk about goals and stuff, but you look at the makeup of our side, the goals are coming from elsewhere, and I find it quite funny. People have panned. I saw a thread the other day about Fremantle shows where Carlton are bad because only always kicked a goal. And I'm like, a bit of a shit game to choose goals, isn't it? When there was like about eight goals kicked in it. Do you know what I mean? Like, is Harry shit now? Is he? But what does that do? That creates turnover. That creates Carlton have got that trap around 60 out, which Luke Ryan fell for four times. Yeah. He doesn't like it. And as any man that bleaches the hair like that outside of the 90s is always going to fucking not want to take on pressure. So big moments in that game. I feel like we're a real complete side. And I feel like, you know, I'm taking this a bit personally. Start giving the boys a little bit of fucking respect, man. Like what more can they do? Like if you want to win by 100, it's probably time to stop watching sport. If you're worried about percentage round four, stop watching sport. Neighbours has brought back Harold Bishop. It's quite easy to understand then, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to give them isolated. 2 weeks ago, Sydney were the guaranteed flag winners. Do you know what I mean? Every side has had some question marks along the way. West Coast last night against Sydney. You've got to find ways to win. This is a hard fucking title to win. It's getting harder every year. And the Blues have really, in my opinion, unbiased, and I said this on Trends, where I'm not allowed to be biased, they have totally flipped their game plan. They have got a transition game. They have got a different stoppage and centre clearance, more rotations. Their numbers have gone up. Do you know their numbers have gone up almost 8 kilometres per team? Do you know how much that is? Right? Wow. We are looking the fittest team, right? What more can they do until you give them a little bit of fucking love? Because I tell you what, if I was a player now, when I read Twitter, I'd request a trade. I'd be like, fuck this. I can't be arsed with these dickheads. You know what I mean? I've gone through two win seasons. I've gone from trying to be slow. I've gone to being trying to be fast, trying to be fucking sexy, trying to be methodical, trying to be blue collar. We've done everything you've asked us to do but win a flag. But we have got what we need. Peter V nails it. If you want a stat, you want to focus on turnover game, is it? We're number one for that. Right, what do you want them to do? Like, if you can write it in chat in bullet points, I'll pass it on. Right, but they're not going to be perfect. They're human beings. They haven't got the kicking skills of West Coast Eagles in the 16s. They haven't got the maturity of Geelong a couple of years ago. They haven't got the anger of Richmond. The Carlton Football Club, a bloody good team that keeps answering the questions. answering the questions.
I love it. Wow. It's got me fired up, mate. Straighten me right up.
Bring on fucking Adelaide. They were top four flag winners this year. Bring them fucking on. Because every one of these teams keeps knocking on our door saying you're not good enough. And every time they go home with a bloody nose. Let's bring the next ones on.
Yeah.
Let's win the next ones on.
Very good. Well, mate, let's get into some votes before I punch a hole in the wall. Let's get into some votes. So,
do I have to?
Chat? You don't have to. We're going to go some votes, and then we can give some love to someone who's not in your votes. Bit of an unsung hero. And then we've got a few more issues to touch on. So, chat, 1, 2, and 3. Who you got? Pommy, who you got?
3 votes. Patrick Cripps. 2 votes. Charlie Kerner. 1 vote, George Hewitt.
Love that. Love that. I went 3 for Weeders. I thought that was one of the better. The way he asserted himself early, he kind of got into the head. Oh, I forgot about Weeders. It's all right, mate. I got you. I got you. I thought Weedering was our player of the game. I thought TDK number 2. I think I put a bit of weight and gravity to the narrative before the game, coming up against Jackson. I knew TDK was capable. I had confidence that he would be fine, but to see him go out there and do it, and I thought over the 4 quarters beat Luke Jackson, who is, he is who he is, and he's got the hype that he has. And then number 1, I'll go Hewitt. No, I'll go Hewitt, and then I'll give some love to someone else a little later. He's going to get a lot of love tonight. But George Hewitt, and I didn't notice it as much as what I did when I watched the replay. But I thought he was brilliant. And he just needs to stay healthy. And he's such an important cog in this machine.
Mate, I think you've nailed it. I think you've nailed it there. Sorry, Weeters. Totally forgot. Mr. Defense here. I love defense. I'm not giving him any love. So apologies.
This is how he doesn't get an All-Australian jacket. This happens all the time. It's not just you. Don't worry.
My special mention was Kent.
Yeah, let's talk about Kemp.
Leading player on ground for marks. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Joint leading player on ground for intercepts. He had one brain fart when he dragged it in, which it happens. I think people were slating him at that point, which I was quite surprised. But I thought he attacked the ball very well. I thought he held his end up. And one thing I am really impressed about is him and Wietering working together. Wildy, I agree. He's human. Was then when he made that mistake, first person over to him was Wietering.
Yeah.
And he hauled him up. So there's actually a great scene. He drags it in, he gets penalized, and he's on the floor like that. He goes like that and he's slamming it. Wietering comes straight up, picks him up like that, and just puts his hand on his head. And you can see it makes him okay. And I was like, we need synergy. At the moment, I don't see the synergy Marchbank and Wietering. Definitely isn't any synergy with Young and Wietering. Kent, though, it's the only time they never run into each other. Do you know what I mean? Marchbank and Wietering, that last game, they ran into each other quite a few times, about 2 times. This, they never do. It's a bit like Charlie Kerno and Harry. So I think that's something to persevere with. I did like Brody Kemp's game. I'm impressed with the boy.
Well, that opened up the conversation around my next question about the forward line. Did you learn anything more about the forward, like the half forward line? Because you can see they're tinkering with it, and we're going to have to tinker with it again because Fogarty's not going to play next week. Elijah Holland probably won't play next week. There has been some suggestion about Kemp maybe swinging forward at times. He did play in the VFL last week and play the second half in the forward line. You think that is a solution once Marchbank's back and playing and fit?
I mean, I really do think, when I was telling you about how far they run, I do think that Voss, in an ideal world, if you gave him a magic wand, would have someone that he could swing both ways, back and forward, and then have an extra midfielder, right? And I think that would really, really help out. Vossi's game plan. I think that's the final jigsaw piece. The half forward is tough, isn't it? Because they've played smaller, which incidentally does look pretty well, doesn't it? And it's quite interesting. You'll see it on the ratings. You want to see how far back we play Fantasia at the minute. It's actually criminal. He's kind of listed as the high half forward, but he's almost a mid. So that's interesting. Ashton's going to come into it, but unfortunately the AFL can't do an AFL fixture properly. So imagine what hope you've got of a B tier VFL. They've completely cooked that. Moore will come into it. It'd be interesting because Pom Cotter, he was midfield resting at half forward. So there's another option. Jack Carroll. The big thing for me is Matt Kennedy. You know what? He has his moments only where you can see it's not his native position, yeah. But he's there when it counts, isn't he? And he's probably someone worth persevering with because I thought his game against North was perfect. The 30% forward, 70% elsewhere could be an option, and you just give Fantasia his old job back, full-time forward, because I don't mind seeing Kennedy in the guts.
They did make a shift. I think it was in that halfway through that second quarter where they played Kennedy a little bit more in that role that he played against the D's on Jake Lever, and he played it on Luke Ryan. How that went for them, I don't really know, to be honest. I didn't think Luke Ryan had as much dominance as what I've seen him before, but he is a big body, and at the end of the day, he took his moments when they arrived. It wasn't a complete prolific performance from him, but when it mattered, he was there. And he took his moments and kicked his goals when he needed to. And that's really all that matters. I'm not going to get too sucked into people's stats across the four quarters, particularly when they're playing in a role. So that's that. Just quickly,
I do think the answer, though, is when Elijah went off, the person who got the full-time gig was Cottrell.
Cottrell.
And let's be honest, Cottrell in that second half, sensational, wasn't he? So. Yeah. He's probably got that gig sewn up. I'd say Cottrell's probably got one of them locked in now.
Yeah. Matty Cottrell, mate. Talk about taking your moments. Isn't it amazing? The week he comes out in, don't remember exactly where he said it, but he made commentary around, you know, no one comes to watch a half forward do his running patterns. That's the week he gets rewarded. Isn't there something to be said about publicly being humble and then getting a lick of it at the end in that game? Shout out to Matty Cottrell. Because last week there was chatter, especially in the rating show, about not winning enough of the ball. I think he had four or five possessions or six, whatever it was. And it's like, oh, he's not winning enough of the ball. Might need to have a spell in the twos. It just reinforces what is actually valued within the four walls, which really we don't know. We don't know exactly what the coaches are valuing in there. We value what we value as fans, and we as fans can very easily get sucked into by default numbers and stats. So good on Matty Cottrell for getting some reward for effort. Unrewarded running, and then all of a sudden every now and again you pop up and you get reward.
Mate, I think you take Oliver Hollands and Matt Cottrell out of that left-hand side.
Yeah.
Carlton lose that game 10 times out of 10. Like, yeah. Both of them conspired for 31.2 kilometres.
Mm-hmm.
And Fremantle attacked that wing 100% of the time. There's a reason we won it. Do you know what I mean? That's insane.
Mm-hmm. My unsung hero was Corey Durden. 8 tackles. Just all over him. Played his role to perfection. Would have obviously loved for him to hit the scoreboard, but at the end of the day, 8 tackles, it's quintessential Corey Durden football. 8 possessions, 8 tackles. Thank you very much. Unsung.
Mate, I think you've nailed it. I mean, that's a lot of tackles, bro.
That's a lot of, and I think how many of them were inside 50?
Well, you'll find out. I don't want to spoil it for your next show, but
it was 7. 7 tackles inside 50. It's ridiculous.
Hey, Pom remembers.
It's a stupid number.
For me, the most overrated stats are, it's why the ratings show is so important to me, because at face value, we were talking about Cottrell last week and saying that how the role is so important. Yeah. Oliver Hollands, everyone says rest him. I saw someone the other day talking about Sam Walsh coming in and saying that you'll put Kennedy on the wing. If Kennedy goes on the wing, Carlton lose 100% games, right? Yeah. Because of the way Voss needs someone to run 50 games. The only person who can play on the wing in our club is Binns, who's not playing. Is Binns. Elijah can get the 15 Ks with pace. Maybe at a push, Chincotta, who finished fourth in the time trial, so he can do that. But it's a very specialist position how Voss wants them, because they've got to be at the fall of the ball forward, then they've got to be at the back. So it's such a specialised position. So people look at it that way, and it's really interesting that when you speak to opposition, they notice how that stops. So I'd say Hollands needs to perfect it, but then if anyone's watched VFL, they'll see Binns and Ollie Hollands, totally two different kettles of fish.
Yeah.
Totally two, like, Binns won't hit them pressure numbers. Binns won't be in the 20 pressure numbers. He'll be about 14, 13, 12. Right? Do you know what I mean? Which then poses a problem. Carlton's ability at funneling and trying to channel the ball goes. Short kicks will be available. Before you know it, it'll be like when we played Port that time and they cut us apart with the short kicks. So it's a real hard, like, if you take someone out of there who can't do it, you've got an issue, massive issue. So, but the big part is Carlton don't go down that side. So the two people that I've seen a lot of complaints about, Ollie Hollands and Matt Cottrell since round one, ball doesn't go down that side. We don't attack down that flank. So their touches, they're having to rob Peter to pay Paul to get them. That's why Akers gets ridiculous amounts of touches, because it goes down that funnel all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a few more bits and pieces from the game. Fogarty, the club have accepted the one-game suspension. What was your initial reaction to it?
Oh, in real time, I thought he actually punched him. Not deliberately. Yeah. But yeah. I actually thought it had come like straight there, and I was like, oh, fuck, you know what the AFL... It looked like he was knocked out. It looked like he was knocked out because Fifey's motionless for about 2 seconds. And then they cut away and there was the fight. But when it got slowed down, I was like, okay, you can probably get away with it because his eyes never move from the ball, right? Do you know what I mean? And there's a wonderful scene as well where Fife gives him a little rub in the next stoppage, like as if to say, it's all right, mate. Look, I know you didn't mean it. It's tough. But I mean, in the nature of the beast, a week is a week, isn't it? I mean, it probably is a week.
I was just a little bit confused with, like, what's the definition of medium impact?
Changes and have
they just gone with the potential to cause injury when thinking about what the impact was? Because let's be honest, the impact was... And also, why was it 50 metres? Why was it a free kick and 50? Because I don't think he was penalised for descent. Was he just penalised and given a 50 because it was a hard collision? That's what I was a bit confused about.
Well, I mean, I think the umpire's got 5 seconds to make it. I mean, in real time, that looked horrendous, didn't it?
Yeah. It looked like a really... And then I think the crowd reaction with that as well, it all adds up. I just don't understand. Like, what was the 50 for? Unless they deemed that Fife had taken the mark and then Fogarty came late. But I thought that they both hit the contest at the same time when the ball hit the contest.
I only watched it on the replay, but I'm pretty sure they explained it as they believe the mark was taken and it was dangerously late. So the 50 was for the dangerously late. I think if you watch it in real time, taking my Carlton hat off, and you know me, I look for any reason to bully an umpire. I can't stand them. But in real time, I can sympathise with the umpire from the angle he was. It looked horrible and it looked like it was dangerous. Do you know what I mean? It did. umpire doesn't get 5 seconds, does he? Of, oh, let's look at the video. It's lucky. He was looking at the ball. So, yeah, it's tough. I'm surprised we haven't appealed it. I mean, I think, though, that maybe Voss likes giving the forwards a break. We've seen them all rotate. One as sub, one as... Maybe Voss has just seen it as you've worked incredibly hard for four. Have the week off. We put the onus now on Ollie's Durden and Fantasia. So, I thought it was interesting we didn't appeal it, but that's my only logic, because he's rotated every forward, hasn't he, every week?
Yep. I was looking forward to an appeal stream.
Sorry, Terry.
Sitting here for 4 hours while our lawyer goes at it. It's coming. We're doing an appeal stream at some point.
I don't think Voss cares about the appeal streams. I think it's just made his life a little bit easier that he was probably like, I need to find a way to give someone Fogarty's job to see how it goes.
Yeah.
And he's probably just gone, fuck it, give him the week off.
Yeah, makes the selection headache a little less. The other one was Elijah. I haven't seen an update on the AFL website's injury report, and I haven't seen an update on the club's injury report. You can only assume that they would have had scans either Sunday or today. So you would think by tomorrow, Wednesday, that we find out exactly what's going on with Elijah. And then I saw some bits and pieces. I don't know if I just got sucked into a Twitter account or a parody account, but I saw something I feel that said Zach Williams. Did I get sucked in?
Oh, no.
Really?
No, Terry, I enjoy listening to you. You tell me what you say.
Because I thought Voss made it pretty clear. And then, no, I think it was Channel 7. People were writing in the comments that Channel 7 had reported a fresh injury concern for Williams. But evidently, I got sucked in.
No, could be. I'm actually surprised Fogarty didn't break his wrist, because I went mental. It was obvious that Fogarty had hurt himself because he held his wrist, and then a fight happened, and I was like, who the hell fights someone with potentially broken wrist? Like grow up. But then there was a little bit of limping at the end from Williams, which is understandable. Elijah was weird because he had like the biggest ice pack ever on his hip. And then suddenly he didn't. Do you know what I mean? Like suddenly he didn't, and he looked charming. I don't think we'll know. But I mean, let's be honest. If Zach Williams has done his ankle, sack Russell. I mean, how fucking dare Russell get these boys fitter than any other team? What a disgrace. If you're watching this, Mr. Russell, hang your head in shame for making these boys fitter than any of it. You're a disgrace for doing your job. A disgrace.
At a very high level. Yeah. No, I just, with Williams, that play at the end, that is quintessential Zach Williams, isn't it? That dance and that dare. And Peter V says it here in the chat. I mean, in the press of Voss, he said that he was fine. He asked him, said he was fine, don't worry about it. You would assume that because he grabbed at the hammy, they're going to do a scan anyway. So we'll just wait on that one. We'll find out. It could have also been, it could have also been from this. He did have his legs swept under him after the kick to Charlie. So,
Wildy, where were you in the live chat? Because I said that that was a clear trip, and some Fremantle fan told me that I needed to man up. Right? Did you know what I mean?
Ain't that rich.
And I was like, Jesus. You know what I mean? You know what, though? You can tell. I'm telling you this. You can tell this, that Mr. Voss doesn't read social media.
Yeah.
Because if he has gone on a press conference like he did and said, nah, Z Will's fine, right? And he's not, fucking hell. What are you doing, Vossy brother? Ring Pom. Pom will tell you, do not say someone's injured. Do not say someone's not injured and then they get injured. The quickest way to get an abusive tweet, that bloody hell.
Maybe we're the suckers. We're the ones that should get off Twitter. Actually, that's exactly the case. Let's talk about what's coming up, because we've got 10 minutes to go before the rating show. We have got the Crow, 4:35 p.m. Marvel Stadium. A reminder, if you're not going, return your tickets via the app so somebody else can buy them. Let's talk about Sam Walsh for a minute. So what do we know about Sam Walsh? We know that from what we've been told, if he trains this week, he will play. That's the quote. Wow.
Not a bad in.
Not a bad in. So Fogarty out. I'm going to assume that Elijah will come out because he wasn't able to finish the game last week. Looked pretty sore. Do you think they will be the changes? And if so, who are the two that come in? Well, one, because Walsh.
So Elijah Fogg out, Walsh in.
Always up? Elevated?
Yeah, I just reckon it'll be always up. I don't think Voss will get too sexy, to be honest, especially without a VFL game. Like I said it in the teams for those who watched it, Pitternet concerns me because that's the most I've seen Pitternet move in about 35 years in the VFL game. So he's definitely not going to be considered, right? Because that might be an anomaly. There might have been something put in his water for him to run that. Like, honestly, chat, I witnessed Pitternet take a tap and the ball went into 50 and there was a couple of like little tackles and spills and he was there in 50. I've never seen him get. I was like, hey! Yeah, I think it's simple. I think it's always Walsh.
Yeah. Marchbank will have, I believe, completed his 12 days. So when did he play last? He played on the Good Friday game. So Wednesday this week will be the 12 days. But then I think it just raises the question. I mean, depends what the coaches think. I mean, do they still rate him so highly that he has to play because he's that good in their view? Or do you just give him a week in the twos and get some touch? I don't know. We'll see what happens there. That is an option. And then when are we going to see Moya? When are we going to see Ashton? When are we going to see Chincotta? There's a lot of players underneath who are just bubbling away. It was a shame that we didn't get to see a VFL game this week. I don't understand why we couldn't have still had a game. Is it just all the resources went to gather around?
I need the name of the guy who does the fixture list for the VFL. Because he's getting a strongly worded fucking email. Like, I don't understand it. I don't understand how it's so easy to do when the AFL thing's done and they bowls it up. I don't understand it. But no, I mean, watching the VFL game, Ashton's probably, like, Cowan's probably would be in with a shout if Williams is not 100%. Because I don't think you'd risk Williams. Like, for me, you've seen how important he is.
Yeah.
Right, don't play him round five if it's an option of he could get injured and be out for 6 weeks or he has a week off and then he's fine. So Cowan's probably up there. Binns is going to be a really interesting one because defensively he's made progress, but then they're going to have a real defensive half forward, which is how we used to play. And I don't see, with Fogarty out, how that could work. I think it could work if you had Binns and Fogarty in front of him. It's going to be really interesting, actually. This is a real good... I like this discussion. But Ashton will be close. That'll be an interesting one because Voss really seems to like one awkward-sized one, doesn't he? So
yes.
Ashton probably isn't there. I mean, his VFL game was good. Was it AFL debut good? And I'm his number one fan.
Yeah.
I personally wouldn't be bringing him in, and I love Ashton. I'd make him a bit more hungry, but he'd definitely be a shout.
Yeah. Well, conditions will be perfect. Under the roof, Marvel Stadium, under the bright lights, Carlton home game, back in the navy blue. That'll be nice. What do you make of the Crows? I've watched all of their games. What is your take on the Crows?
Danger game. You know I'm not. You know I wouldn't say that. I have way too much respect for myself. But they're a peculiar one, aren't they, the Adelaide Crows at the moment, because it's not coming together. And I think what is really interesting when you watch Adelaide at the moment is it kind of feels, dare I say it, a little bit like our start of the season.
Yep.
You can see the skills are there. You can see the talent is there. The execution, though, is almost illegal. It really is. So I feel like they're going to be a team that kind of needs the game we had. Do you know what I mean? He kind of needs that after Essendon game, you know, where a team implodes, where they get over the line. And I think once they get over the line, I think they'll be fine. I feel like they're just a bit crestfallen at the minute. So yeah. I feel like if we come in, we bring it. We bring this physicality, say it's hard, it's tough. I think we should be okay. So, like, for me, keep it comfortable. Just keep your arm's length. Keep them at arm's length and let them know there's levels to this game.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited for it. Excited to be back at the football. And then we've got pretty much it's 3 Saturday or 4 Saturday games in a row. So the fixtures kind over the next few weeks when it comes to breaks. And we also enter a very important part of the fixture. So very excited about that. So... what's next? Well, that's right. We had an apology sent in. So,
I hope.
Yeah, we did. We did. So, we obviously played North Good Friday, and you guys all saw the absolute mayonnaise of the conversation around Charlie Kerno and his free kicks and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, we made some new friends from the Further North podcast who said some comments in their review about Charlie Kerno and his free kicks. And I thought I would just bring our evidence-based culture at BA to them and pointed out that actually Zerha and Larky were the ones that actually get the most free kicks, goals from free kicks since 2022. And the reason why it was since 2022 is because Charlie didn't play for the two and a half years before that. So we had an apology sent in. Have a listen.
For those who don't know, I went on Blue Abroad before the Good Friday game with Terry, and we had a great preview on his show. And then he listened to our wrap of the Good Friday game last weekend and messaged me during the week and wanted to talk about the umpiring comments that we made and that every North supporter would have made following that game. He sent me a couple of stats since 2022. The two players who have kicked the most goals from free kicks are Cam Zerha and Nick Larky, followed by Harry Mackay, should I add. And the player that's kicked the most goals from the least amount of free kicks is none other than Charlie Kerno. So,
Ed Kerno?
Charlie.
Oh, he's got a brother. Sorry,
yeah, that guy, remember?
Yeah, I didn't know.
That one who tore us to pieces last weekend. Yeah. How could you forget?
Yes. I was in my feelings a little bit last. I said Carlton fans suck basically last week, and I didn't mean that. So, Terry, I apologise. I was just emotional after the game. look, interesting coming with stats. Very prepared man. Very smart man.
He's a very, very clever man, and he's doing pretty amazing things. So, Terry, we know you're listening, and we wanted to apologise.
We'll get you next year though, Terry.
I want to apologise on behalf of Josh because everyone knows I'm totally on board the Carlton thing.
I'm not.
Josh is not, but that's okay.
Look, it's not like I'll explain my Carlton thing quickly. I don't dislike Carlton as a club. I hope we can replicate something that they have done. The fans are just another level of chaos. They're, in my opinion, crazier than Collingwood fans have ever been, maybe equaling what I thought Richmond was at the time.
I can't believe the guy had never heard of Charlie Kerno but had heard of Ed Kerno. What the fuck is going on there?
So good. Just
we like Marnie. A co-star. Ginger Pom, we'll call him.
No, fair play. Fair play. They owned it. Shout out to Marnie. Love your work. Well done. You know, sometimes you just got to put your hand up. That's all. So good on him. And also, if you think Collingwood fans were chaotic, you have no idea what's about to hit you. So,
genuinely, I'm offended by that. Like, I think 90% of us are all right.
I think they've seen nothing yet. I know they've seen nothing yet. So, that's that. Now, 30 seconds to go. Guys, that's the BA show for tonight. One major announcement. So, tomorrow night, Footy YouTube. We just we're about to shake it all up. So a new show premieres tomorrow night on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. It's called Footy Abroad. And the concept is essentially this. Well, StreamYard, which we stream this show from, has this new feature where you can multi-stream through your guests. So the BA channel, the Saints TV channel, Swoop Luke, we're teaming up and we're starting a show called Footy Abroad. And basically we're going to go through the league's themes and issues from the lens of the footy content creators. Our first guest is none other than the man to my to my right, Pommy. So basically how it's going to work is it'll stream on everyone's individual channel. So we're going to need some BA representation tomorrow night. We're going to test it out. Should be a bit of fun, and it premieres tomorrow. Very, very excited about it.
I can't wait. It could be good banter. It's always a pleasure teaming up with Swoop. I've got a soft spot for Swoop, and I'm just basically going to spend an hour trying to make Jake crack a smile, because he's a tough cookie to crack, is Jake.
He's a tough cookie to crack.
I'll break him, but that's my aim. 60 minutes of Pom trying to break him.
Yeah. It's going to be very, very interesting. We might actually ask Jake where he would like the Blake Acres statue. Yeah, so it should be a bit of fun.
I can think of some places I'd stick it.
Well, hold off until tomorrow. Otherwise, see you soon. We're done for tonight. If you're going to stick around, no, you should stick around. Stick around and watch the ratings, especially when we get to Adam Saad, because we're going down a cultural journey tonight with Adam Saad. Pom, thank you. Love you. See you in the ratings.
See you in a minute.